hour two of the show. Vic Nizar, Randeep Janda, and you as well. 650-650 in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. A-Dog running the show for us today. Finally got a trade. We finally got a trade. Kevin Fiala going from Minnesota to the LA Kings for a first-round pick, and Brock Faber, LA inking Kevin Fiala to 7 years, $7.9 million, $55.3 million. And I think the immediate reaction is, all right, that sets the market for JT Miller.
Does he net the same return, though, or will he still get more? That's what I'm wondering.
I'm talking from the contract point of
for
view.
For sure. But I'm saying, like, as far as a return goes in terms of players, prospects, et cetera.
Sure.
Okay, let's – if you're talking about JT getting more, the reason would be because he has put up more points. He's – his career year, last year of 99 points, he's been a point-per-game player. That's the case for it. What Fiala gets, though, is, remember, 25 years old. That's huge here. The much younger player – he's not in his prime yet. You're assuming that he's going to get better as he gets 26, 27, 28. So the idea is that the age makes a huge difference here. So I think you got a one strategy that the LA Kings used here was that Minnesota did, my apologies on that, is that they went for quality rather than quant. They went for a surefire top 20 pick and a guy that should feature in the right side of defense, top four, for the Minnesota Wild in a few years. Like, that's how good Brock Faber is supposed to be.
Along with Kalen Addison, they kind of have their vision of what their top four looks like 2-3 years from now.
Yeah, so you have high-end talent. Now, do you go for that top 15 pick maybe for a JT Miller? You want a little bit better if you can get it. I don't know which teams in the top 15 would make that happen. And B, the prospect. You know, we've talked a lot about Nils Lundqvist. Let's just use New York Rangers for an example.
Sure.
So, is there a team out there that can give you a really high pick and a really good prospect? Contenders usually don't do that. That's the problem here. The LA Kings, for the player that they just acquired, they were in the perfect spot. They're a team that had success, but they still got some ways to go. So that 19th pick overall looks really, really good in this deal. But which team that's been linked to JT Miller, other than maybe the New Jersey Devils, can offer you a top 20 pick? There's not many.
It's tough to come
by. So that's the conundrum there, right?
Yeah.
Where you want a high pick, and it's a comparable package, but
Columbus.
I don't know. Sure.
Like, I mean, we've mentioned that name a lot.
They've got some young players. They've got that team. You know, I think Philadelphia, if they really want to shake up their culture, that's another one that you could maybe look at. You know, but beyond that, New Jersey, Philly, and I would throw a Columbus in there just to say, if you're looking for a comparable package, a high draft pick is necessary. And those are the three teams that can bring it to you.
The contract is the one that's interesting to me, because I think the initial sticker shock is, well, if he's getting 7.9, JT's going to get 8. And I got to admit, I think this is bad news for JT Miller, because, again, he's 25 years old. Age really matters, and that's the point I was illustrating earlier at the top of the show. You can go back to hour one and listen to it. Age really matters in this scenario. There aren't a lot of players. Like, JT... If he goes to UFA, he's kind of creating his own market. And this is why I go back to that question. Is his talent big enough that it warrants creating your own market? Are you going to be the outlier? And you go through it. It's like, this is the thing I'm concerned about if you're JT Miller. It's, here's a 25-year-old who had an 85-point season. Not a far cry, by the way, from 99.
Yeah.
There is a gap, but it's not... It's still over a point a game. It's still an overwhelming, fantastic season. 7.9 over 7 for a 25-year-old going into his prime. They're buying his prime UFA years. You're not buying prime UFA years for JT Miller. You're not buying age 27. You're not buying age 28. You're not buying age 29. You're starting the contract at age 30. And if you're worried about this $8 million figure for over 8 years, we just watched someone get 7.9 over 7. I'm not sure that reality exists, and this is why I go back to the two names I mentioned earlier today, Randeep. Logan Couture got 8 over 8. Max Pacioretty got 28 over 4. You kind of average that out, that's 96 over 12. That comes to 7.7, 7.6 if you want to be really precise.
Yeah.
But, like, it comes to that number, and this contract, while it's a massive payday for Kevin Fiala and it's fantastic, $55 million of total money, I think this is bad for JT Miller. That if you're trying to set a new market, and look, it's winger and all that sort of stuff,
yeah.
But this to me is not necessarily comparable too directly to JT Miller, because I think Kevin Fiala probably commands more.
He does, in the sense that, you know, the age is the big factor. And yeah. That's one of the reasons.
Well, the total money is the thing I'm looking at.
For sure.
I'm not sure JT Miller crests $55 million.
So if you're JT and you're looking at this deal and saying, all right, clearly I'm not going to get – there may not be an appetite to give long-term. And mm-hmm. we've heard, you know, from Vancouver
six years.
6 years is kind of that sweet spot where even Jim Rutherford's mentioned that as a number. Now, if you're hitting the free market, though, because Fiala didn't hit the free market. He's an RFA. He's traded mm-hmm. for. They negotiated. They got it done. If JT, A, either hits the free market or is able to lock in with the Canucks, or July 13th comes around and an extension is on the table with an acquiring team, but you don't want to go the full 7 years that you can offer, what's that number if you knock it down to six? Is it six years? Is it 8.5? Is it
like, 8.5 million?
If you're trying to get that overall number,
mm-hmm.
like, is it nine million? It's like, if you're the player, what are you trying to get here? Because if you can't go the full term, like if other teams are apprehensive of, hey, we don't want to go 7 years with you, are you looking at 5 or 6? And what is that annual average then? Because you're right about total money, but what will the market bear for a player, whether that's here in Vancouver or elsewhere, who had a hell of a year, a career year? But the question is he our best player on any team across the league? That's the question with JT Miller. Yep. It's not about, is he a good player? We all acknowledge he's a good player. We all acknowledge he's a heart and soul guy. The question that JT Miller and his agent need to answer is he the best player on a team that's going to be in the playoffs competing for a Stanley Cup? That's the question that the Vancouver Canucks are probably asking at Rogers Arena right now.
Let's just play that out. Go through the teams that we think would be interested. Toronto?
He won't be the best player, no.
Okay. Florida?
Nope.
Boston?
Nope.
Washington?
That one makes me think a little bit.
Just because of Ovi's age?
Ovi's aging. You've got some really good players there, but I would probably say he could be. He could be at least a 1B.
Pittsburgh?
Nope.
Rangers?
Nope.
Columbus?
Yes.
Okay. Philly? Probably, yeah.
Probably. Like, I got love for Sean Couturier because I think 200-foot game.
Me too, yeah.
An elite player, Selke level, but I think he's in the combo. And the other team I would throw in that conversation as well, New Jersey.
I'm still going through names.
Okay,
here.
Okay.
New Jersey?
I think yes.
Jack Hughes exists?
No, but Jack Hughes, what, like, has he played a full season is the point.
Yeah,
so,
okay,
like,
fair.
With JT, I think Jack Hughes, they know what they have in the player.
That's a maybe. How about that?
But, like, Jack Hughes has to prove that he can stay healthy. If as of right now, I'd say JT would be in the conversation because he can stay healthy.
Carolina?
I think Sebastian Aho.
Sebastian Aho exists.
Yeah.
So, again, it just goes to the question, are you a franchise player that dictates you creating your own market? And I'm not convinced that he can prove that it's like, hey, I deserve more than what Logan Couture got because I'm that much better. I'm going to reset the market. There's a difference between resetting the market and creating a market. And like Conn McDavid can create his own market and entirely reset it as well. I'm not convinced that there's going to be enough interest either in the trade market and then give him a contract to warrant saying, hey, we have to give him X, Y, and Z. And I think you're just proving it right now. 7.9 over 7 for a 25-year-old. To me, JT probably slots in behind that. That total money, that figure there, is a big deal for me.
Okay, so there's the JT Miller conversation. Now, Kevin Fiala and what he got at 7.9 annual average on a long-term deal, what kind of impact does that have on Brock Besser from mm-hmm. a contract perspective? And the reason I ask this is, if you look at points per game in their career, Brock Besser has a higher points per game. He's played less games than when Kevin Fiala. Kevin Fiala has had a higher ceiling. Last year, put up 85 points. Brock has not come close to that. So when we're looking at the case to make of who is the better player, I think most of us can acknowledge that Kevin Fiala, when you see him play, there's a dynamic nature to his game.
Looks a little bit different.
He looks like a guy that's going to, you know, force you to jump out of your seat when he's playing at certain times, especially against the Canucks the last few years. Brock Besser, even though I know this market, and I've been a part of this as well, saying, hey, some of his game has been disappointing over the last couple of years. In the bubble year, he was really, really solid and picked up a lot of points and all of that. Last year, we know for various reasons, including focusing on the game was very difficult last year, and there's a human side to that. But the question here is, if that's the long-term deal with Kevin Fiala, who has a better individual career season than Brock Besser, but less points per game. He's played 419 games in his career.
Yeah.
Brock Besser, why does his number land on a long-term deal?
So here's what's interesting. The total career of Brock, his points per game has been very, very consistent.
Better than Kevin Fiala.
It's been better than Fiala. Fiala's peak, especially these last 3 years, has been better than Brock. Basically, Brock's rookie year and the North Division is when Brock has been better. But Kevin Fiala's points per game these last 3 years have been fantastic. He's really started to emerge as a, as you put it, like a dynamic, just constant threat every time he touches the puck. He's got 179 points in 196 games, pretty close to a point a game. That's just higher than Brock Besser's peak. However, total package, as you mentioned, points per game, Brock has been better throughout the entirety of their careers, 419 games versus 324. The thing with, if you're going for stability and saying, hey, Brock's been more stable every single year, 0.8 points per game, he's been there all the time. Health has been a problem. So it's great that you get stable production. Are you getting availability? And it's just these constant conflicting ideals between the two. And this is where, like, for me, it clearly slots in behind, both on the trade value and then obviously the contractual value as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see. I know Shayna Goldman, who we've had on this show numerous times on the station, she sent out a graphic, I guess, from The Athletic talking about Kevin Fiala's market value based on his production over the last couple of years. And that number, the 7.9 number shocked a lot of people. Some people saying, what, Kevin Fiala's worth that much? This model that they have at The Athletic puts his dollar figure at, based on market value, at $8.5 million per season. Kevin Fiala. So that does give you a sense of, if this player was to hit free agency, UFA status, he's making more. Can we make a case that Brock Besser would be worth that much? I don't think you can.
No.
I don't think you can. So the ceiling on the player really matters. And I get the overall sample size. But the last 2 years, Kevin Fiala has been one of the most dangerous players in the Central Division. This is a division with Nate MacKinnon, Cale Makar. Go through the list of players. Philip Forsberg. Kevin Fiala has been just, maybe not to the level of Nate MacKinnon, but if you're watching dynamic players putting up points over the last 2 years, he's been a very scary player. So,
I mean, Vancouver fans remember.
Absolutely.
The bubble. Like, every time Fiala touched the puck, you felt like something was going to happen.
Exactly. And if Thatcher Demko and, you know, the team's not playing a certain way, there's a very good chance Minnesota ends up winning that series because Fiala was that dangerous. So when we talk about contracts, 7.9 for a Kevin Fiala and a 7-year deal, it might be actually a little bit of value for the LA Kings based on what you might be have to pay this guy in free agency. When you're relating it to Brock Besser, I think you can make a case that Brock's a $7 million player on a long-term deal. Can you say that? He's in the range of a Kevin Fiala, though? I don't know. Like, Brock Besser's long-term number right now, based on his points per game, should be pretty respectful. But like, you're going to be paying a fair bit, but do you have the appetite to sign the player to a long-term deal right now? That is the question.
Man, the other part of this, too, like, that $7 million number is interesting because, like, someone like William Nylander, his cap it is less than $7
million. Yep.
To your point of just, like, watching a player and their dynamic ability, I think we'd both say, like, skating ability, being able to create your own shot, Nylander and Fiala have better independent ability to create offense. Maybe Brock probably fits better in an over-team construct.
Yep.
Because look, Brock is very good along the walls, keeps plays alive, recycles possession, has defensive ability. We've seen that. But when you need to score goals, those two guys, it's like, it's so easy to just see them create their own space, cut to the middle of the ice, bury a goal on their own. You know, we've talked to Yannick so often that sometimes someone needs to create the chance for Brock Besser. The next evolution of his game has to come from how he does it independently.
And that's where I think when you're making that comparison to Kevin Fiala, Fiala is one of the scariest players in the NHL in transition.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about processing and playing with speed.
Just putting fear in defenders.
Absolutely. Like, you're on the back foot when he's coming. You're playing on your heels. Where I think Brock Besser, we're making that comparison. He's got a long way to add points to his resume, first and foremost. But when you're justifying 7.9 for Kevin Fiala, I'll be honest, it's really easy for me. That number, I think, is going to be a very good number for the LA Kings going forward. But Brock Besser, creating your own shot. How are you doing that? And that's how you start hitting that next tax bracket, where are you able to create your own shot? Are you dependent on other players? Kevin Fiala can create on his own.
Let's talk to one of the hardest working guys we know.
Speaking of creating on your own.
Yeah, he's constantly hardworking, but he's definitely busy at this time of year. We're thrilled to talk to him now. Sam Cosentino, NHL draft analyst for Sportsnet. Sammy, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Nice to be on. How's everybody over there?
Oh, we are doing fantastic. We get to talk about Kevin Fiala instead of JT Miller today.
Yeah, that's a nice change of pace for you, for sure. That's a interesting deal, and you're starting to see some of the LA Kings prospects come to fruition, those assets being moved for the help you now kind of thing. So it's nice to see, you know, LA move in that direction. I'd like to see Ottawa start moving in that direction.
Well, that was one team that was kind of linked potentially to Kevin Fiala. That deal happens. But I wanted to hit you on Brock Faber. He's going the other way to Minnesota. Just the ceiling on this player, because it feels like, you know, they do love him out there. Judd Brackett, who was somebody who worked here in Vancouver, is now running the draft for the Minnesota Wild. But is that a top four D-man in the NHL, Brock Faber?
I think he is going to turn into that. And, you know, the interesting thing is when you look at LA, they've got, some depth on the right side. Right defensemen are always coveted. So this is an area that can be addressed by Minnesota with a guy that obviously Judd would have some super knowledge of. And you bring a kid home, which is kind of a cool thing. So it checks a lot of boxes for the Wild. Obviously, moving off of Fiala's potential money is huge. We know what kind of cap situation they're going to be in here. So really just a good deal all around. And when you think about the first round pick as well, like that's heady stuff. So, nice work there by Billy Guerin. He doesn't fool around. Like he gets down to business. He gets stuff done. He doesn't care about, wrinkling feathers whatsoever. He's a go get 'em type of guy. And I appreciate that attitude.
You weren't working on a mock draft and suddenly you have to redo after pick 19, were you?
Oh, yeah. I got to go home and make that tweak right away. For sure. For sure. There's no question about it. So that's kind of a cool, cool thing to try and get your, get all your stuff together before
yeah.
It all comes together. I think, though, guys, we're going to see a bit more of this. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of looking forward to that happening because I've predicted this draft to be unpredictable, and you're already starting to see that come to fruition well before we even get into Montreal. So that's cool.
Well, let's talk about someone that we've spoken about before, but speaking of unpredictable, Brad Lambert, I watch him and I think you see all the physical traits and it's just so obvious to just say, hey, like put this guy on ice. He's going to be one of the fastest ones. He can create a little bit. Now, why has the stock fallen so much from where we were a year ago? Because if you just look at the traits, it's like you can see the traits are very obvious.
There's a lot of noise there with this player. It's never a great look when you're switching teams. And, whether it was coincidental or not, he leaves the team with the top prospect in Joaquin Kemmel, who had been blowing the doors off of the league before he had the shoulder injury. And on the same team as Brad Lambert, and then all of a sudden Brad gets left in the dust. He switches team. He gets more opportunity, more ice time. The production really doesn't change a whole lot. And it's perplexing because if you go back to essentially a 17-year-old year, he puts up 15 points in 46 games, and that's pretty good. So you expect those numbers to be good in Liga in your draft year for predictive NHL success. That surely wasn't the case for Brad. But then you get teased by the two games at the World Juniors where he puts up 5 points and he's absolutely lights out. You see how light he is on his feet. He can score. He can make plays. His skating is really good. So he checks a lot of boxes from the hockey side of things. Now, I have to say this. I interviewed him on you're going to love this, guys, Instagram Live. Okay.
Let's go. At Sammy Cause 4, too, by the way.
Nice. So, and he was awesome. He was great to deal with. He was having fun. He was having a couple of laughs. You know, really was telling a story about how his dad and his mom met, and it was great. And then we interviewed him again at the Combine this year, and he just, I don't know, he just didn't look the same. He looked like, he looked fatigued. And I don't know if it was like the mental stress of the year he's had, the, you know, the physical stress of, you know, playing this season and then going working out with Gary Roberts and then going to the Combine and meeting with all these teams. He just didn't look to be the same. And that bothered me a little bit because I really came to enjoy him over that half hour I spent with him on Instagram Live. Just looked like a different guy. So I think when you take hockey in a vacuum, there's a top 10 talent there waiting. I think if you take some of the background noise, it does throw up some red flags. But, hey, he's not the first guy to go into a draft with, you know, with that outside noise and come out of it to be a really good player. And I still project him to be a really good player. In terms of projecting where he can go, oh, man, I've talked to a lot of guys here the last few days, and I make the joke that he can go anywhere from 5 to 50, and he might not be too far off of that. He might be this year's Aturatu.
The way you describe him, it just feels like if there's one player that a team might trade up to get, and if he drops, you know, to 15 or 20, is this a player that teams would be saying, okay, yeah, there are some questions, but this is too valuable a player, too much of a potential star to pass up on? Like, options to trade up for, is Brad Lambert one of them?
But don't you think the same thing about some of the Russian players?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like Danila Yurov, yeah.
Yurov. I think that way about even Miroshnichenko, because you're pretty confident that, you know, that he's cured. And so are you in a position where you can take that sort of risk? For me, I'm more of the opinion that he's probably a guy who's going to end up with a multi-pick team. I think we got 7 of them in the first round, or maybe 8 of them now, that ends up with the second of those 2 multi-picks, where you're taking a bit of a chance with the guy. You're probably going a little bit more safe with your higher pick and a little bit more risk-taking with your lower pick. So I see him, if he goes in the first round, it's probably with a multi-pick team.
Who's the guy, like, last year, it was Matt Coronato for me. Just unheralded, didn't get a lot of buzz, and I just feel like we're going to look back and say, oh, yeah, like, he's just so solid, and how do we screw this whole process up? Is there a guy, and, you know, Braden Point maybe was a guy in years past as well, is there a player that you're looking at this year that maybe just a bit unheralded but just solid all around the ice?
Probably Ryan Chesley, defenseman out of the U.S. Under-18 program, was really good at the Worlds. I've met with him a couple of times over the course of this year. But he's just a steady guy. He knows how to move pucks. His skating is just fine. And he plays, he really pays attention to the details in his own zone in playing defense. And it's a little bit refreshing because, let's face it, guys, a lot of defensemen that we're talking to these days, we're talking about their offensive upside. If it's a Korchinski, a Minchikov, we're thinking that that part of the game is what really is exciting people. And I think with Chesley, I think it's exciting to know that it looks like he's got the defensive side taken care of. I'd say aside from him, Noel Warren, big defenseman out of Gatineau, 6'5". He knows exactly what he is and what he has to do, and he's making no mistake about it that he, again, is that complementary defensive defenseman who's probably not getting a lot of love, but will probably in the mock draft, which comes out next week, will probably be, you know, in the last pick in the first round, in my opinion.
All right, looking in that range where the Canucks may be, Frank Nazar is another player that you look at where, not the biggest, but does he play a big game? Is that something, you know, when you look at the competition that he provides maybe in a squad or the level of effort, is that something that is going to be attractive to a lot of teams in that range?
I think so, and I think his background story is kind of cool too, because he grew up with his parents owning the parking lot around Joe Louis Arena, and you know, they used to sneak him into games as a kid, became a Red Wings fan. But more, you know, the family went through some tough times, ended up having to sell off some of its assets. He's got 3 sisters. Their family's really tight. And so, you know, when he goes out there and he plays, he's playing with purpose because he's playing for his entire family. And I like that backstory about him. But when you watch him play, you can see that competitive nature come out in his game. I'll defer to Jason Buchla, my colleague over at
at Sportsnet, more from the hockey and the scouting side, is, you know, offense doesn't come naturally to him. He's got to work at it. And so you might be mildly concerned, but the fact is he's never going to shortchange you on that work. So you'd expect him to produce at similar levels to what we've seen at the U.S. Under 18 program. A little bit of a knock in terms of the size, about 170 pounds, maybe 5'9", 5'10". So you'd be concerned about that a little bit. But I think he'll be right in that range where the Canucks are picking, and I would say that that would be someone they would have interest in.
You know, one of the things I like to look for in prospects, whether it's any sport, soccer, football, hockey, basketball, it's like, what is your one trait and how consistent can you be at it? And is that the thing that's going to translate to you in the pro? And we're just coming off of the Stanley Cup final. Cale Makar, you know, takes a lot of headlines. I'm just curious if a lot of people are looking at someone like Denton Mateychuk and just saying, hey, that movement ability, it's going to translate to the pros, and we can work on all the other facets. For him, what's going to be the hurdle for him to not rise up the boards to even go maybe even top 10 or something like that?
The hurdle for him is going to be that people are going to be concerned as whether he can produce that type of offense, whether the offense that he's provided so well for the Moose Jaw Warriors will translate to the National Hockey League. So that is going to be the one thing that holds him back. Now, having said that, he's done a really good job in that regard. He's an unbelievable young man. When you watch him, he takes command out on the ice. He's directing people at face-offs and where to go and when to get there and that sort of thing. So you like those elements of his game. But I think if it is something that would hold him back, it would be a concern teams would have for his ability to produce that kind of offense at the next level.
So in the top 10, we've had, you know, a lot of buzz about the top three players, of course. You know, Simon Nemec and David Juracek are getting some buzz too. But Cutter Gauthier, you know, Geeky, Kemmel, Savoy. Who do you look in the top 10 that's maybe flying under the radar just a little bit in terms of the ability to make a change within an organization? Is there somebody in that top 10 beyond the top three, maybe even the top five, that you look at and say, all right, this guy's not getting a lot of love right now?
It would be Marco Kasper. He's a top 10 pick all day for me. I think he enters the conversation as early as 5, and I don't think he gets past number 8. So he's a guy that hasn't gotten a lot of love to this point. I had him around the middle of the pack. I think in my mock 16 that came out right after the lottery, I think I had him going to Vancouver. I no longer believe that that's going to be a possibility. Really good at the end of the year playing for Austria at the Worlds. And also a guy whose responsibility just increased in the SHL as the playoffs moved on. So I like that element about him when you see that improvement when it matters most and when it's in important situations. But he's a guy now that I don't know how many people are giving him credence inside that top 10, but I think he enters the conversation as early as 5, and I wouldn't have said that a month ago.
Talking to Sam Cosentino here on The People Show, Bick Nizar and Randy Bjana, getting set for the NHL draft, which is next Thursday, going to be here before we know it. Canucks drafting 15th overall. The other guy I want to just quickly ask you about is, I'm going to butcher his name. Is it Tristan Luneo?
Tristan Luno.
Luno, okay.
The defenseman?
Yeah. Yeah. Just because I'm looking at right shot D-man so many, and you mentioned Ryan Chesley. Just where you feel like his game is at as well.
So Luno, I had him just outside of my first round. This is a wonderful, wonderful young man. He had some knee issues going into the off season, which eliminated his ability to work out and train for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And even this season got a late start on the action. And I believe that there was no point this year where he played at 100%. And I think that was corroborated by the fact that when I saw him at the combine and asked him about it, he was a guy that was not going to participate and didn't participate in any of the jumping tests that they do at the combine. So that said to me that there's something still lingering there, and I think a lot of NHL teams have done their due diligence medically on this player, and I think there are some concerns there. Now, outside of that, giving this off season to train, the one thing you know about Tristan, he's going to put the work in.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a question. I got a picture of him on the bike from the Gatineau dressing room about a week ago from his coach, Louis Robitaille, saying, hey, look at the timestamp on this thing. It was 6:30 a.m., and Luno was already in there on the bike. So that part, you're never going to get ripped off from him in terms of his ability to rehab and recover. I do, though, think some teams have some concerns about the long-term medical issues that may arise.
Sammy, we always appreciate it. We know it's a busy time of year. Get some rest before next Thursday.
Okay, Vic, Randy, thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Thank you very much. It's Sam Cosentino, NHL draft analyst here on Sportsnet. And go check out his final rankings at sportsnet.ca, and also be on the lookout for his mock drafts coming out soon.
It's pretty amazing how about a month and a half ago, we were talking about Marco Kasper maybe being around 15, 16
picks. It was like, oh, that's the safety school. It's like he's projected 18th overall. Marco Kasper will be there. Don't worry about
it. He could be an intriguing option for the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. And now Sam thinks he could go as early as number 5, but
not getting past 8.
Not getting past 8, which is tells you, you know, when there's popular picks, when there's players that the combine can make a difference for players. When you not only talk about, hey, physically, how do they look, but mentally, do you like their attitude? And clearly, Marco Kasper is one of those guys that his play on the ice has mattered. But even the other aspects of, is there the right attitude? Is that there? Seems like it is for him.
By the way, not getting past 8. So you look at what the team that is. I don't know if you have the draft order in front of you.
I do.
Okay.
Detroit Red Wings.
Detroit Red Wings. Moritz Seider, Lucas Raymond, Marco Kasper. Is that another name to throw in the mix there?
Yeah, and there's even your boy, Frank Nazar, as well, was somebody that Sam said, hey, the Vancouver Canucks at 15, they will probably be taking a strong look at him if they want to stay in that spot. But I did ask him.
I love how it's become my boy.
Your boy, just because the names are similar, right?
I do like the player.
And if you look at the Canucks where they sit at 15, that's why I asked that question on Brad Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's a team that's really in love with this guy, right?
Yeah.
Somebody that maybe had him high on the draft board, but obviously this year takes a bit of a hit, a significant hit, not a bit of a hit.
Let's say like Buffalo.
Yeah, the second pick. Like Montreal is an option.
Well, let's say Buffalo passes on him at 9. Buffalo's got 28. And they say, hey, we were choosing between Lambert and someone else, and even at 16 for Buffalo. And he still keeps sliding. There's scenarios here where, as Sam said, teams with multiple picks, are they the ones that are going to try to jump up?
So the teams you look at there, Buffalo you mentioned. Montreal is another team who's got the first overall. Mm-hmm. They've also got the 26th overall.
Winnipeg's got 2.
Winnipeg's got 2. Arizona's got 3.
Mm-hmm.
They've got 1 in the lottery, 1 in the top 3. Then they've got another one at 27. Then they've got another one at 32. They got 3 first-round picks.
And 36.
And 36. So if you're looking at a team to make a move, and that really...
And 43.
So it could be Lambert because he's got...
And 45.
All right, we get the point.
They got a lot of picks.
I get the point. But the whole idea here is if you have a player that has been so... It kind of like the Vasily Podkolzin conversation,
yeah.
Right? Like, there is an opportunity for a team to jump up and take him if they want him at 10 because he dropped out of the top 3, which early on people are saying, this guy's going to be a high-end talent. The Canucks love the player. They sign him. We know what the story is. But is there a team that says, Lambert at 15, we need this guy. It's our second pick of the draft. Arizona has got 3 picks, Vic. If there's a team that's going to maneuver and work their way up to get a higher impact player, them, Montreal, Buffalo, I would say as well.
I just wonder if Arizona's like, hey, our timeline is different. Our timeline is just, let's take as many shots, even as we really like this guy. I wonder if Arizona would rather risk him sliding to 27 or 32 just to see, hey, what is the drop, rather than let's deplete this massive pick haul we have.
Well, that depends on where he is on their board.
Yeah.
If he's higher up, then you're saying, all right, wait a second, this guy is somebody we really, really like. Now, the other question is, how high is he on the Canucks board?
Because mm-hmm.
if they have him ranked higher, then you're saying we just make the pick. So if you're in that spot and teams are calling, where is he on the Canucks draft board is a big part of this equation as well, because we've got another text that I believe Jeffro sent in saying if he's there at number 15, the Canucks have to take him.
Well, let's play that out on the other side here. We got to go to break.
Sorry, I should say Mike and Victoria said
okay.
That. Yeah.
Because we're a week away, and it feels like we don't really have a consensus, like, buzz person. Maybe it's Marco Kasper that people wanted. Maybe that's too far. Maybe it's Frank Nazar. Maybe it's Brad Lambert. Who is the prospect you want to slide to 15 right now? Text in 650-650. A week away from the NHL entry draft, who do you want for the Vancouver Canucks? We'll talk about it on the other side. Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Here is where we rock out with Brock.
Right circle, Brock Besser delays, shoots, and scores.
This is Besser's Net 650, is the official home.
We march on. People's show. Vic Nazar, Randy Fianda, A-Dog running the show today. So we asked you, because we're a week away here. The NHL entry draft. Who is it that you want? Because part of this is predicted by, hey, who gets drafted before you. But we don't really have a consensus like, that's the guy we need. That's the guy. There's a couple of guys I like. Marco Kasper was one of them. Ryan Chesley is a guy that Sam mentioned I actually really like. I'm not sure if 15th is a spot I really want to take him. Kind of a defensive D-man. It's a bit high leverage. You want to try to get that superstar upside. But who is the guy that everyone's looking at and saying, hey, if that guy is at 15, you don't even pick up the phone when it's ringing. You just race to the podium. Who is that guy for you, Randy?
Yeah, we got a lot of texts coming in on this. But for me, when I'm looking in that range, and he could fall to the Canucks, but he's also been kind of linked to that maybe 12 to 13 spot to go right before them as well, is Kevin Korchinski. 6'2" defenseman, you know, big body, but sees the ice well, is a good passer. He can kind of, you know, dance along the line a little bit on the power play as well. Good defender as well. So to me, is there an option on the table in that range where you can potentially get a top four defender down the line? And he is a left shot, but you're playing the long game here. Unless you got a top three pick in this draft, nobody's coming straight to the NHL. So is there a defenseman that is smart, that is mobile, and can play the style of game that you see down the road, can launch an attack? Kevin Korchinski, I think, is that player to me where big body, but also sees the ice very well. So that's the one I'm saying. If he's in that range, that number 15, he doesn't go in that 12 to 13 range where I know Sam Cosentino has him in that range as well. That's when I look and say, yeah, big body, just can he provide a defensive option, maybe in your top four, potentially for a decade. Like, that's the type of player he is.
I got to admit, I think I just keep coming back to Brad Lambert. It's the same circumstance that you were just saying earlier, where someone's value just seems to have slid. Vasily Podkolzin was that person for the Vancouver Canucks a few years ago. Going into that year, it was Podkolzin could go to two. And at the whole process, it's like, okay, instead of two, maybe he goes five. And then it's maybe not five, maybe it's eight. And then the 2 weeks leading up to the draft, it's maybe it's 13. And suddenly you're Vancouver sitting there like, hey, this guy that we previously, like everyone thought consensus top two, top three pick, he's going to be there for us at 10. Let's just take him. I'm just curious if maybe we're overthinking the whole Brad Lambert experience. Because I understand like the statistical profile and there are some underlying numbers that don't look appealing. But there's no way to just watch him and just say, oh, he's clearly like faster than everyone. He's clearly got hands that match with a lot of different people.
Yeah.
It's very easy for the layman person to just look at this and say, hey, this guy's a little bit different than everyone else.
Yeah, the stats don't look good. And if that's the initial assessment, obviously it doesn't look good. But a couple of things to keep in mind. You know, we've chatted with a lot of prospects analysts over the past couple of months. The transition to new team, the Pelicans, was not a good one.
No.
It was a team that needed offense. They needed him to play a bigger role. And at this point in his career, which I mentioned, you know, he's very young.
And I remember they also like flipped him to the wing, so there's position change. And just based on some highlights here.
And remember, it's a young guy
that's
getting a responsibility really, really early. That can be challenging on many fronts, right? So 1 year, you can't really make that assessment on what he's going to project. He's definitely one of those individuals I look at and say, somebody will be in love with this player. And if he's going to get to that range, whether it's 15, whether it's 20, I do feel like there's a team that's going to either love him at the spot that they're picking, or somebody's going to say, hey, we got the 27th pick, 28th pick. We're going to move up to get this guy because he's a first, you know, top 15 talent that's starting to drop now.
And he's played center. He's right-handed. There are so many markers to say, hey, if this works out, what a massive, massive boost it is to your organizational depth chart. And by workout, I don't mean, hey, future 75-point player. Workout means like, hey, we get another real NHLer in this. If it's middle six, top six, second line. Like, that's still a big bonus.
I like this one from Alistair in Clearwater, though, because he says, I don't really want Lambert at 15. Our prospect pool is so awful that our pick needs to hit, and Lambert is way too risky for my liking. So let me put a proposition to you then. If Lambert's there, comes with risk, but you can also add probably a late first round and maybe another pick on that. Do you fall in love with Lambert enough to make that pick, or do you say, we need depth in the organization, we'll take the 20, whatever pick it is, 26, 27, 28, and we'll add a second rounder potentially, or a third rounder, and we're willing to pass on that player? Like, how much in love are you with Brad Lambert? Because I look at that for an organization that does need numbers as well. That's an intriguing option. Now, we don't know where he is on the Canucks draft board, but I seriously think you have to consider that, because you need more than that one player. And if it's a risky player that somebody wants to take a shot on, I would consider that. Absolutely.
What's fascinating about this draft is, hey, the difference between the player that's getting drafted at 13 versus the difference of the player that's getting drafted at 36. How big is that gap? And to your point, do you want to be the team that just falls in love with the guy and doesn't try to extract a little bit more because the gap in value or the gap in potential from the guy at 13 versus the guy at 34 isn't that large? That's a fair question. And I think we're going to have that no matter who the player is drafted at 15, if that's where the Canucks do wind up selecting, to say, well, okay, you picked this guy at 15. Could you have gotten 22 and 44 and gotten two guys that are similar? That's going to happen no matter what in this scenario. But to the point of like, hey, Brad Lambert is risky. Is he risky just because the projections are so wide and You don't want to be the person that says, oh, well, we had him number four on our board and we got him at 15. Or you don't want to be the person that says, hey, he's somewhere in the 30s and we took him at 15. Is it just because the projection is so wide? Because technically, a lot of these guys at this stage in the draft are risks.
Yeah.
Because you go through the history of drafts like 15 and beyond, the hit rate changes real fast.
It does. And I guess it's the element of risk. If for this regime, how important is it that their first pick in this draft is somebody that you can actually make? You know, we were talking about the previous drafts with Jim Benning and who made it, who did not. It's not great. Ylevi, Virtanen, go through the list.
The first draft has to hit.
It does, and that's why I think that's a risky pick. I'm with Alistair on that one.
Right,
intriguing
but then
talent,
you want to torque down the risk and say, hey, Ryan Chesley. But it's like, hey, he's probably going to be just a stable defensive D-man. That's great. It's like, I love the player. Are you doing it for the sake of this just has to hit and we need any functional body in our depth chart? Or are you doing it because, hey, we believe in our draft and development and this player, we can understand the circumstances of why he's risky and we can torque down that risk based on our own process now as an organization?
And that's key, right? You're not going to shy away from risk. You're going to lean into it if you believe the player can hit. Like, that's one thing we don't have access to. We don't know where he sits for certain scouts within the organization. The other thing, Bick, is if you think this guy's the real deal, you're going to make that pick. But the bigger thing for me is not the risk side of things. It's, do you feel that tier from 15 to 32, is there a wide range? And if you don't, can you get two players potentially in that in that tier? Because two is better than one.
Like, especially because of the Russian factor here. Like, I'm curious how deep the slide is for a lot of those players. Because we're not just looking at one particular player. It's like, oh, hey, how far is, you know, when we're talking about Podkolzin, like, how far is Podkolzin going to slide down? You know, the Russian factor, you mentioned Yurov. Like, there's a host of Russian players here that you would traditionally say they have high profile. But there's a bunch that could slide down. It's not just one guy. It could be three, four, five guys that slide down deeper, and that could be your draft gold.
So you mentioned Yurov there. Marcus and Gibson's coming in with simply Yurov is the guy that I hope drops to 15. And I think when we look at his KHL lack of production, he didn't get much ice. That happens. We've kind of been through that with Vasily Podkolzin as well, where sometimes development is not the thing that KHL coaches care about. We know that. Different team than Podkolzin, but still, at the same time, that's kind of the MO. But that's another example of you're planning out 2 or 3 years down the road. You're not planning out now. Who knows what's going to happen in the political situation? So are you in a position to say, this guy is a top 10 talent. He's probably going to slide. If he gets if he gets to the point where saying, when you're comparing Yurov versus Lambert, Lambert, you're saying, all right, he had a rough year. With Yurov, didn't have a great year in the KHL, put up blanks really when he was in the KHL with limited ice time. But as you project out, I think that one's a tough one to look away from, where you're saying, this guy's actually got top six potential in the NHL. Most people that have scouted him say that. Most people that have scouted him say that he is a top 10 pick in the NHL. So if he gets down to 15 or further down, that's the one I look at and say, all right, with Lambert, there's actually questions of, has he dropped off? Mm-hmm. With Yurov, the reasons for him slipping are pretty different. That's one, the one I look at and say, I'm with Marcus and Gibson's. You have to look at that player a couple of times and say, all right, this is a guy that you probably make a pick on.
You can throw in Trikazov's name, Gleb, that we've talked about before. Mirshenko's name is in there as well. There's, again, four or five Russians that could slide and that maybe they go start going in the 30s range. Guys who traditionally would go in the teens. And, you know, to your point, I'm sure the Vancouver Canucks would love to trade back, get multiple shots at this, and especially in a draft where they are playing from behind already. No second round pick. And if there's going to be gold to be found from pick 31 to 49 in that range, because of the Russian factor of guys sliding, is that something the Canucks look to do? It's probably the most prudent approach, but in a world where you're stuck at 15, and that's the other part of the risk that we were talking about earlier, is it only a risk because you're picking at 15? You can't change your draft slot. You start where you start. Would you be more comfortable picking Brad Lambert if it was at 22?
For sure you would. You would. It eliminates the risk a little bit, right? But like...
You only live in that reality until you live in that reality, right? It's until you can get to 22, then it's different.
For sure. And I think we've got a couple other names that are popping up here as well. Matthew Savoie is another one that...
I just wonder if he's going to be there at 15.
Yeah, he's a top 10 talent. Mm-hmm. Now, we've heard a lot... I look at the other Winnipeg Ice player, Connor or Geeky, that is the one that if there's going to be somebody that slides, it's probably him. And his skating is the big knock. And we've had a couple of individuals like Elliott and Ladner saying, hey, I know his skating is a big part of the reason that he's potentially going to drop, but he's a massive center and he's got good hands. His stride is fine. He just needs to work on his edges. He grew so much over the past 2 years. He will get faster.
A lot of, I'm just reading the inbox here. A lot of Kevin Korchinski love following you there.
If you look at the profile, it's a really intriguing one. Because even though, and especially for the Canucks, right? Long term, what do you have behind Oliver Ekman-Larsson?
Jack Rathbone, yeah.
But a certain profile. You want to have somebody else in the pipeline as well. So I know there's a lot of focus on the right shot D, but who's available at 15 if you're making that pick? Nemec isn't going to be there. Mm-hmm. Juracek isn't going to be there. Big defenseman. He's got vision. He can move. He can run the power play if you need him to do that as well. It feels like the perfect succession plan for an OEL whenever that happens. And he's on the books for a long time, but if you're trying to build towards a young defenseman that is mobile, that can activate, that can make a play, that's one guy that I look at and say, Korchinski? Yeah. Listen, when you're 6'1", 6'2", Bick, and a defenseman, there's going to be a lot of fans naturally, and that's not a slight, you know, to the other guys. But I think generally, when you're that big and you have those tools, people are going to gravitate towards it.
We'll talk about that more on the other side. And also, we barely touched on some news out of Pittsburgh. Josh Yowie putting out an article, and Brian Burke was on the Merrick Show yesterday talking about Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang. We'll do that conversation on the other side. And also, Kevin Fiala on the move, going to L.A. and signing a big deal. More about that and Don't At Me coming up in 20 minutes here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.